Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight's terrifying tale is about a woman named Hannah, who is visiting her uncle, who lives in a remote cabin in the middle of the woods, tells her some family secrets that she was unaware of, and then all hell seems to break loose. What happens next? Stick around. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe. Click on that bell and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend.
My name is Hannah. Hannah Kozlowski, if you want my full name. Though most people just call me Han. I'm 25 years old, and I've lived in Edmonton, Alberta for my entire life. Edmonton's fine. It's home at least. I'm writing this because I don't know how much longer I'll be alive, and I want to share you a story that I've kept secret for the past 3 years. At the time, the story was ridiculous. Well, it's still ridiculous. But at this point, I don't care if I get judged for it. I just want to get the truth out there and tell everyone to keep away from Whitewater Lake. Like I mentioned, it all started 3 years ago when I was invited to spend a long weekend with my Uncle Koz at his cabin. The Kozlowskis are a big family, and I mean big. A few dozen cousins, 6 uncles, and half as many aunts. Just on my father's side. It's what you would expect from an old Polish Catholic family that had been in Canada for generations. Aside from my parents, Uncle Koz was always my favorite. He was something of the black sheep of his brothers. The one who never married, never went to school, always had big wads of cash near a hand, brought us the best presents, and drank the most at any family gathering. Uncle Koz had always liked me the best out of all of his nieces and nephews, since I was the one who loved being around him. He would always be telling stories of drunken adventures and summer romances to the kids until his brothers and sisters shut him up and hurried him out of the room. When the coast was clear and nobody was watching me, I would sneak out to the yard and sit with Uncle Koz while he chain-smoked. The two of us tried our best to muffle our laughter while he told me stories of my parents being stupid kids. It was safe to say that as I grew up, Uncle Koz and I were best friends. I was the only one he would invite to his house at Whitewater Lake, so once I was old enough to have my own car, I would spend almost every long weekend at the cabin as long as school and work wasn't too crazy. This story truly begins about 3 years ago, on the July long weekend. I was 22. And Uncle Koz had called me and invited me to the lake for Canada Day weekend. I had been invited to a party or two, but the chance to retreat to the lake was far more appealing to me than the idea of hanging out with drunk frat guys and sorority girls. I tossed a few bags of clothing and toiletries into the trunk of my car, along with the huge case of beer, and slammed it down with a big grin on my face. It was going to be a great weekend. The drive to Whitewater Lake took about 3 or 4 hours, depending a lot on the weather, and also depending on what had happened in the forest since you had last been there. You see, the thing with Whitewater Lake is that, well, for one, I don't think that's its name, not officially anyway. I've never found anything online about it, and it has no name on Google Maps. So I'm guessing Whitewater is just what my uncle calls it. The other thing about Whitewater as I don't think my uncle owns the land he's on, and I don't think anyone is supposed to live there. The only way to get to Whitewater is if my uncle tells you how. It involves turning randomly off a range road and plunging through a number of barely usable roads for almost an hour, using certain stumps and patches of bushes as guides for where to turn left or right. If it had rained recently, nothing is getting through the mud. If a tree fell on the road since the last time you were there, you have to move that bastard yourself. If a moose or a bear had decided to wander down the trail while you were trying to use it, you'd learn quick that you'd move at the animal's pace, not yours. Given all this, the trip to Whitewater can take anywhere from 3 hours if you're lucky to 6 if you're not. I got somewhat lucky this time, making the trip in about 4 hours, with a couple stops to drag debris off the back roads of the forest. It was around 1 o'clock when I got there, parking my car below the front porch, and stepping out into the fresh forest air to stretch my cramping legs. For how desolate I had made this place sound, it's actually a great place. I have no clue how Uncle Kaz actually got all this stuff out here, but I've learned not to ask too many questions about his life. The cabin is 2 stories with a large basement, stone foundation and brick, wood, and logs making up the other 2 floors. Uncle Kaz filters and collects his own water, has solar panels to power the place, hunts, fishes, and grows his own vegetables. All said and done, the cabin is completely off the grid, with no internet or cell service for scores of miles in any direction.
"Is that Han I hear crashing through the woods?"
came a booming voice from the woods to my right, where I turned to see Uncle Kaz striding out of the pines, rifle in one hand and a dead rabbit in the other. He dropped them both on the ground and ran up to me to embrace me in a big bear hug. We both laughed as he sat me back down and picked his gun and rabbit back up.
"How's my favorite niece doing?"
Uncle Kaz asked over his shoulder, striding towards the front door as I trailed behind him with my bags.
"Great, as always. How's old Uncle Kaz?"
I smiled as I stepped inside the cabin. The smell of fresh-cut wood, old pine, homemade bread, roasted meats, and old brick assailed me all at once, and I took a deep breath in and let out a sigh.
"Who are you calling old?"
Kaz scowled at me as he fixed the dead rabbit on one of the kitchen meat hooks.
"You?"
I shouted as I made my way up the stairs to the guest bedroom. Well, my bedroom for all intents and purposes, as I never knew Uncle Kaz to have any other guests besides me. I smiled as I entered the familiar room and tossed my bags onto the bed. Thick wool and fur blankets were piled high on the bed frame that Kaz had built himself. Aside from the bed, the room was sparse, with a small desk and chair, a wardrobe that still had some of my forest-worn clothing from the last time I came up, and 2 small bedside tables that flanked the bed. I unpacked quickly and changed into some clothing that fit my new surroundings better. A loose cotton tunic that I had made myself under Uncle's direction, thick fabric hunting pants, and a sturdy pair of leather boots, all of which gave off the scent of pine, blood, and campfire smoke. I strode back downstairs, where Uncle was skinning and cleaning his rabbit in between chopping vegetables for a stew. I walked over to the big brick fireplace at the center of the great room and tossed a fresh log onto the hot, smoldering coals.
"Hungry? Stew won't be ready until tonight, but I have a half a loaf of bread and some of this year's jam,"
Kaz said, gesturing with his knife to a cloth-covered basket at the end of the kitchen island.
"How about a beer?" I asked from the couch. "As long as you could bring me one,"
Uncle grinned. I went to fetch the case of beer from my trunk,
It was one of the few things that he couldn't make himself, so he always had me bring a case when I came by. I lunged the case into the cabin and banged it down onto the kitchen island.
"Careful! It's not often I get that stuff up here,"
Uncle said, pointing at me with his knife. I opened the case and cracked a beer for each of us. We clinked our bottles together and took a long swig.
"Lovely. Warm."
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
"This piss. Why don't you put that case in the fridge?" he laughed. Uncle Kaz was a woodsman. One look at him and you could tell that. Long grain hair tied back behind his head, a half-gray, half-black beard that stretched down his chest complemented a body that was tall, thin, but lean and muscled from years of living in the woods. I was a girl who had gone soft from city living, according to my uncle, but had collected my fair share of scrapes, cuts, and scars from weekends spent at the cabin. My Uncle Kaz prepared his stew. We chatted back and forth of what had happened since the last time we had seen each other, which would have been in the fall before the snow had closed off the roads to Whitewater. Nothing much happened to him over the winter. He would read and hunt and sit by the fire, trying to keep away cabin fever. I filled him in with how the family was, and how school was going, and any major news that had happened out in the wider world. When COVID struck a couple of years back, Uncle Kaz hadn't even heard of it until I went to go see him as the vaccine was almost completely rolled out across the country. The stew being prepared, we tossed a few more logs into the fireplace, hung and covered the kettle, and took a walk down to the lake. Whitewater is small for a lake. You could probably walk the whole thing in a few hours if the forest wasn't in your way to stop you. It was shallow, which made it warm in the summer and good for swimming in, and the remoteness meant there was always plenty of fish to catch, or clams to dig up in the small creeks that fed the river. Whitewater Lake was truly a hidden paradise in the wilderness of Canada. Uncle Kaz and I spent a few hours shooting targets, throwing out lines for fish, and swapping stories until the stew was finally ready around 6 o'clock. We spooned ourselves each a huge helping, and sopped it up with a fresh loaf of bread until we were too full to move. After a nice post-dinner nap, we went outside and lit a huge bonfire down near the lake, which we sat next to and watched the birds soar above the face of the lake. "Han, I got something to tell you,"
Uncle Kaz said after a few moments of silence.
"What's that?"
I asked, concerned. Kaz wasn't one for getting sentimental, and my first immediate thought was that he was dying.
"You were right. Your Uncle Kaz is getting old, and you're the only one in the family I trust completely, except for old Granddad, but he's been 6 feet under for decades now," Kaz said, taking a sip of his beer and gazing over the lake.
"You got cancer or something?" I asked jokingly, hoping it would cover up the concern in my voice.
"Wouldn't know it if I did. No, there's a family heirloom that needs a heir. And I want that to be you," Uncle said, turning to look at me.
"An heirloom?" I raised an eyebrow.
"Well, more of a recipe,"
Wait here, Kaz said with a wicked smile as he pushed himself to his feet and walked away.
You ever wonder what was in the old boat shed?
He yelled as he walked along the lake shore to the old boat shed that had stood there as long as I could remember. I had never been allowed inside, always being told that it was an old building with some rusty, dangerous tools that would give me an infection if I wasn't careful and got cut. I didn't respond as Kaz unlocked the shed and disappeared inside, emerging a moment later with a brown glass bottle. He strode back over to me and tossed the bottle to me, where it landed on the grass with a soft thump. I looked up at him and he gestured wordlessly to the bottle. I gave him a questioning look before I opened the bottle and was almost floored by the smell alone. Uncle let out a deep laugh and slapped his leg.
What in the F is that?
I asked, rubbing my nose with one hand and holding the bottle away from me with the other. The fumes alone felt like they were burning the inside of my nose raw.
It's shine you got there, Han. Take a sip, Uncle said with a broad grin on his face.
No way, I said, recorking the bottle and rolling it back towards him.
Ah, well, I guess I can't blame you for that. Here, try some of the mixed and flavored stuff. I shouldn't have started you with the raw rot gut,
Uncle Kaz said as he pulled a small flask out from his back pocket and tossed it to me. I caught it and uncapped it. Unlike the bottle, this smelled sweet, like ethanol and cherries, and didn't burn my nose. I took a small swig of the flask and found the drink surprisingly good. There was a distinct alcohol taste, and the liquid warmed me as it went down. But there was no immediate retching or recoiling like there was with a shot of most liquor.
Careful with that. It's about 70% alcohol. Or less. Or more. Lord knows, I didn't label that one. Don't go blind,
he said as I took another sip.
Jesus, that is smooth,
I said, throwing the flask back to him.
Damn right it is. Best moonshine in the north, and made by Kozlowskis for three generations.
He smiled. And I want you to be the fourth.
Me? I said, somewhat shocked. As if your old dad, or any of your useless cousins, are gonna keep the family business going. You're the only one to take up the brand.
Kaz sat back down next to me and took a swig from the flask. Tomorrow, you're gonna learn how to make it yourself.
All right, I'll frickin' do it, I said with a beaming smile. I had considered what was being proposed for a moment, but the idea was too cool for me to pass up. Being a 22-year-old, the ability to make barrels of alcohol myself would surely rack me up some social credit on campus.
That's the spirit, Uncle said, and we passed another hour on the lakeshore before turning into bed. I was woken up the next morning, but to the sound of banging on my bedroom door.
Wake up and get dressed, Han. We got a long day ahead of us,
came the voice from the other side. I rubbed the sleep from my eyes and groaned as I swung my legs off the bed. I dressed quickly and hurried downstairs, where a hot cup of coffee and two pieces of buttered toast, flanked by scrambled eggs and bacon, were waiting for me. Uncle was nowhere to be seen, so I wolfed down the food and chased it with the coffee before I strode out into the backyard. Uncle Kaz was leaning against the door to the boat shed smoking a cigarette when he spied me. The revenuers won't give you this much time, gotta be up early to be a shiner. He smiled, and I waved him off with my right hand and I stifled a yawn with my left. I was taken aback by the boat shed. What I had always imagined held an old, broken motorboat, and some oars turned out to be a massive still, pipes twisting here and there between barrels and metal drums, with stacks of firewood and burn marks on the floor. Shelves lined the wood shed, covered top to bottom with bottles. To the back of the shed, the floor fell away into a cavern that had a small winch at the top for the raising and lowering of barrels. A few wooden barrels and some burlap sacks were piled near the winch, and the shed smelt of coal, fire, and liquor. Uncle Kaz shoved a notebook and pencil in my hand and, without warning, launched into a lecture about making the moonshine. I'm used to university lectures, but I've never had an 8-hour lecture before. We went over what kinds of mash to use, the best way and the best materials in which to build a still, the exact mixture of ingredients, how to bottle, how to store, and how to mix the shine so that it was easier to drink. We stopped briefly for lunch, and after 20 minutes we were right back at it. By the end of the day, my hand was cramped from writing and note-taking, diagram drawings, and asking questions. I had never received such a comprehensive education on, well, anything in my entire life, and I had never seen Uncle Kaz so animated or serious as when he was explaining to me down to the smallest measurement what the Kozlowski family recipe was for moonshine. The sun had begun to make its way to the western horizon when Kaz finally let out a big sigh and ceased talking. "Any questions?" he asked. "Plenty," I replied. "Well, save them for tomorrow. Let's have you actually see what the end product should taste like." Kaz smiled. "Pick any bottle off that shelf there. Should have labels with the flavor." I grabbed a bottle off of the shelf I had been pointing towards that said, "Peaches and Cream," on a white sticker on the bottle's body. I held it out to Uncle Kaz, and he took it from me, tossing it back and forth between his hands. "Good choice." He smiled and walked out of the shed. We stirred the ashes of last night's bonfire to uncover a few smoldering coals, which we heaped with leaves and twigs until a small blaze was alive again. Piling logs on afterwards, we had a roaring fire not even 15 minutes later. My uncle and I dropped ourselves on the grass by the warmth of the flame and let the grass soak up the weariness of the full day's work. I uncorked the moonshine bottle and took a swig of the bottle. It tasted delicious, almost nothing like booze, and I instantly felt the labors of the day wearing away. "Sihan, if you're going to make moonshine, you gotta know what it's like to drink it too," Uncle Kaz said as he took his own swig off the bottle. "Sounds like the easy part," I said with a smile as I reached out for the bottle. Kaz snatched the bottle away before I could reach it. "That's where you're wrong, Han. This stuff here, it'll be the death of you if you're not careful. The first Kozlowski to make it died from drinking too much. And the second one, your great-grandfather, he died because men got jealous of his empire. You be careful, won't you, Han?" "You know I'm always careful," I said. And Uncle Kaz finally handed me the bottle back. "I know you are. That's why I picked you. You're the only one I trust to carry on the family name. You understand?" Kaz asked, staring at me in the eyes. I nodded. "Good, Han. I'm proud of you. I hope you know that." Me and Uncle Kaz heaped the fire higher and worked our way through nearly half of the bottle over the next few hours. Kaz brought a few slabs of meat out from the kitchen, and we roasted them on spits over the fire with some vegetables basted in wild honey. We ate, we drank, and we laughed until the night had thrown its starry blanket over our heads. A million stars twinkling above, and a thousand more dancing inside my moonshine-rattled brain. The woods were dead silent around us, and the lake was still as glass. The stars were above and the cool grass below. Moonshine was within, and my family's legacy was all around. It must have been near midnight, as the moon was about high enough for it, when nature called and I excused myself to retreat to the cabin. I lurched unsteadily up the back porch, giggling to myself over how drunk I was, and imagining vivid adventures of my forebears smuggling moonshine across the country, knowing that someday that would be me. I was in the bathroom washing my hands and dreaming away when something caught my attention. At first, I assumed it was drunken images, but slowly began to realize that something was happening outside. I turned and flicked off the bathroom lights so that I could catch a decent glimpse outside. Luckily for me, the bathroom window faced towards the lake where our fire was. I peered out into the darkness and my heart leapt into my throat. Three shapes, three men, had emerged from the woods and formed themselves in a line on the far side of the fire, and their features I could only barely make out from the distance and through the darkness. Uncle Kaz had lurched to his feet and was standing at the ready, with the knife he always wore on his belt tucked in his hand behind his back. While I could not make out what they were saying, I could hear that they were arguing, yelling. Kaz was pointing his now free hand towards the woods, and the three men were slowly beginning to encircle Uncle as he began to walk away from the fire. I screamed at that moment, but nobody seemed to hear me. I knew that Uncle kept his guns in his room, and I bounded up the stairs as fast as my drunk legs would carry me, smashing the door of my uncle's room open with my shoulder. I threw my eyes around the room frantically before I spotted my uncle's hunting rifle leaning against his bedpost. I grabbed it and quickly checked that it was loaded before dashing to the window and trying to find a way to open it. There was no latch, no screen, no nothing. I stared out the window and saw that the three men confronting my uncle had become six, three new ones creeping in from behind. And to my horror, it seemed as though my uncle hadn't noticed them. Having no other recourse left, panicking, my head swimming with moonshine, I pulled back the rifle and smashed the glass of the window out with the butt of my uncle's rifle. The shattering of the glass seemed to throw everyone off balance for a second, and I quickly shoved the rifle out of the shattered window and fired off a shot with a deafening crack. I could barely see what I was shooting at. I was drunk, scared, and trembling. But I racked another shot and let it off at one of the shapes I hoped wasn't my uncle with another crack. More shouts echoed from the lake shore as the repeating fire cracked another bullet into position and roared to life in the still night. Crack, 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 crack. My ears were ringing and my hands were sweating profusely when the rifle fell silent and began to speak only in a muted click, click, click. I was out of bullets. Two dark shapes were sprawled out on the ground by the roaring fire, but all the others had vanished. Fuck, 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 I whispered to myself as I scrambled wildly around the room for another cartridge of ammunition, but found nothing. I heard a shout and a splintering crack as the back door of the cabin was thrown open, and the sounds of many boots on wooden floors echoed hauntingly throughout the house. I threw my eyes about wildly, the wildfire of anxiety raging in my breast, and my pulsing fury of adrenaline coursing through my veins. I have to hide, I thought to myself desperately. The bed? Too expectable. Out the window? Too noisy. Too much glass. Fight them? No way in hell. My mind was racing when my eyes fell on the wardrobe. Fuck it, I thought to myself, and yanked the door open, throwing myself into the tangle of hanging clothes. A bizarre clicking sound entered my ears from close by as the sound of wild men and wild footsteps rang throughout the house. Suddenly, I felt the wall giving away behind me, and before I knew it, I was falling helplessly into darkness, watching a thin beam of light above me being swallowed into the black. They say the way they treat head injuries in movies, TV shows, and video games is bullshit. If you are passed out for minutes of a time after a head injury, you're screwed. It must have been only 30 seconds that I was unconscious for, if I was even unconscious at all, as it was hard to tell in the pitch-black dark that surrounded me. I pushed myself to my feet, and my head was swimming. I assumed my vision would have been blurry too if I could have seen anything. I groped around in the darkness, and felt a set of cold iron bars set into damp stone just out in front of me. To my right was what felt like dirt, but to my left, everything opened up into open space. I groped blindly along the walls until I felt a light switch that I threw into the on position and was instantly blinded by bright lights. I was in some sort of control room, bunker. A desk full of computer monitors hummed to life in front of me, displaying a shot in a choppy audio feed of what appeared to be every room inside the cabin, including the boathouse. On the walls of this strange room were cans of food and racks of guns, and what looked to be first aid kits filled with common prescription drugs. I turned around behind me to see a set of metal bars leading up into a dark dirt shaft. He has a secret bunker inside of his wardrobe? That bastard, I thought to myself. As I threw down the empty hunting rifle I was holding and touched the back of my head to feel for blood, I was not bleeding, luckily, but I was still drunk as could be, and my wits certainly weren't all about me. I plopped myself down into the office chair that stood guard before the desk of monitors and gazed into the screens. There were six strange men standing in the great room, and only one laying bloody on the couch. Uncle Kaz. One of the men was leaning heavily on his left leg, the right one soaked with blood from a wound in his calf. Another was holding his shirt against his arm, and a third was bleeding freely from a number of shallow cuts about his torso and face. Hit two of them at least, I thought to myself as I strained to hear through the poor quality microphones. Checked every room for the bitch, found nothing, the man holding the shirt to his arm said. Look again, her car is out front, where do you think she's gone? Roared the largest of the men. He must have been halfway to 7 feet tall, massively muscled, with a ragged black beard covering his face. Go cut her tires and turn the house upside down. Drunk, tired, and scared out of my wits though I was, I couldn't help but focus intently on the screens as the men spread up around the house. Only two carried guns. The rest had a mixture of knives, axes, or hammers. They were all dressed in ripped and ragged clothing, as though they had been living in the woods for years on end. All save the two smallest and apparently youngest had thick, unkept beards that reminded one of ragged bandits from some ancient story. I heard the sacking of the house both through the monitors and through the roof of my bunker. As far as I could tell, wherever I had ended up was below even the basement of the house. I watched as the six men ripped the cabin apart top to bottom, throwing things everywhere, unaware of the memories of mine they were destroying. Sadness and rage ripped at my heart as I watched them obliterate what my uncle had loved so dearly. And all the while, Uncle Kaz laid bleeding and moaning on the great room couch.
We found the shine! Where's the money, you frickin' bastard?
Yelled the giant man as he held Uncle Kaz by the collar of his shirt. Kaz did nothing but moan in reply, even after the giant had slapped him across the face, which dripped lazily to the floor, eliciting no more than a feeble moan from Uncle.
He ain't gonna talk, we need to find that bitch of his,
one of the wild men said to the giant.
So, find her!
He roared, and hurled the empty moonshine bottle at the man, who ducked as it sailed over his head to shatter against the fridge. Try as they might, the six men ripped through the house for a good hour, finding nothing.
One had even pitched Uncle's wardrobe to the floor. But the secret passage to my bunker had failed to open to him. I must have stumbled onto a secret switch, I thought to myself. After the house had been ransacked, the gang of men had returned to the great room to gather sheepishly around the giant.
"Nothing,"
a hawkish-looking man said, evidently braver than his companions.
"Well, you lot are good for frickin' nothing, it seems," the giant screamed, at which the band of men shook.
"She can't have gone far. She'll die in the woods more than anything," the hawkish man replied.
"Fine. Glass Eye and Levy stay here until the chick comes back. Find out where the money is and kill her. The rest of us will take as much moonshine as we could carry back home," said the giant.
"Levy? The idiot will bleed out before we even find her," the hawkish man said, who I guessed was Glass Eye.
"Then find her faster," the giant roared back.
"How do we know that the shine is even any good? Let us have a barrel ourselves, why don't you? The girl ain't going anywhere in the night," said one of the scrawny beardless men, with a vicious smile that was short a few teeth. The other men aside from the giant seemed to murmur their general agreement, and the giant threw himself down into a chair and waved his hand dismissively.
"Whatever, do it," the giant said.
The six men rolled a barrel from the boat shed into the great room and cracked it open with a ruckus roar. They dipped cups into it and drank deeply, and before long even the giant had joined in. Singing, dancing, and roaring with laughter, the six men who had invaded our cabin drunk themselves into a blind fury that night. Two of the men, whose names I gathered were Madison and Concord, beat each other senseless in a drunken fistfight, while the other four looked on, cheering and shouting loudly. Another two, whose names I learned were Levy and Whiskey, were scrapping over who'd get me first. It came to knives being drawn before the giant, whose name was Jack of Spades, threw both of them down on the floor and roared that I wasn't to be touched until I relieved where Uncle Kaz's money was. As for Uncle, he grew paler as the night wore on, whimpering and gushing blood from a knife wound in his side, unresponsive to the chaos around him. Near to midnight, when the gang of men were all well and truly drunk on shine, Jack of Spades stood from his chair, tottering with an entire flagon jug in his hand.
"Gentlemen," he roared, "let's give our gracious host a toast benefiting someone of his stature and ability."
Jack of Spades grinned viciously as he filled the entire jug with moonshine from the barrel. I was screaming inside myself and tried to pull my eyes away from the screen, but I couldn't. I couldn't, I swear. Jack of Spades grabbed an old ratted towel from the kitchen and threw it over the face of my Uncle Kaz, who still laid on the couch, moaning the last of his life away. Jack dumped the jug of moonshine onto Kaz's face, and Uncle spasmed under the sudden onslaught of fire water into his nostrils. I see no need to describe the whole event, but Jack of Spades poured four full jugs of moonshine onto my Uncle Kaz's be-ragged face before the man stopped moving with a final jerk of the legs and laid still. The men laughed. They laughed. They laughed as ugly red-hot tears streamed down my face, bursting onto the floor. I didn't care if they could hear me anymore. They had killed Kaz, the man I cared about most in my life. The sadness, however, was quickly replaced with a burning, restless, unquenchable rage, along with a blanket of tiredness. I was furious, but had never felt so tired in my entire life. I prayed that night. I prayed for God, for something, for anything, to kill me and all those evil men who killed Uncle Kaz. I prayed for something to destroy the world, to destroy the stupid cabin at Whitewater, to burn the whole frickin' place to the ground. When I woke up the next morning,
my prayers were not answered. I awoke slumped over the console of the monitors and watched the disgusting men who had killed my uncle wake up from their moonshine-induced slumber. Jacko Spades was the first one up and began barking orders the second he was on his feet.
Levy, Whiskey, you stay and find the girl. We'll take the shine away. Follow us when you have her,
Jacko Spades bellowed, and the harried woodsman nodded assent, dipping coffee cups into the dregs of the moonshine barrel to chase off their hangovers. Jacko Spades strode from the cabin with three of his gang he had chosen to take in tow, and vanished out of sight from the cabin cameras. Part 2. The two men who had been left behind, Whiskey and Levy, were two very mismatched men. Levy was a short and scrawny boy who looked no older than 17, with matted hair that may have had color other than the black if the dirt was washed out. He carried a rotten old rifle, and he had a rusty Bowie knife shoved into his belt. Whiskey was a head taller than Levy, and looked about 20 years older, with a bulging beer belly and a drunkard's nose. He had a fireman's axe propped on his shoulder. As soon as the rest of the gang had departed, Whiskey filled another cup of moonshine for himself and plopped down into a chair by the fireplace.
"Aren't we gonna look for that girl? I'd like to get my hands on her before we take her back to Jack,"
Levy smirked, baring his yellow, rotting teeth. I shuddered at the thought. "We tore the house apart already. She's probably gone off in the woods. We'll sit around for a few hours and tell Jack that we couldn't find her," Whiskey said as he took a deep drink. "Good. I'll probably have a chance against a scrawny kid and a bloated fat drunk if I could sneak out of here," I mumbled to myself as I watched the camera feeds. I checked the store of guns that was in the bunker and found a shotgun that I figured would suit my purposes. I loaded it and tucked a few extra shells into my pockets, propping the gun against the ladder that led back up to the house. I opened a few cans of food that looked appealing and settled down for a quick meal as I watched the two men. Levy wandered aimlessly through the house, picking over the ruins of last night's destruction. He found a few pieces of my uncle's clothing and exchanged them for his threadbare garb, looking at himself smugly in the standing mirror. Whiskey never stirred from his spot in the chair, except to refill his cup or gorge himself on eggs and meat from the fridge. Luckily, Levy eventually got bored of scavenging and decided to start drinking too. I sat motionless in the bunker for hours as the two men got steadily more intoxicated. I had turned my chair away from the monitors for a moment and started to pace back and forth across the room, when a tidal wave of sorrow and fear crashed into me, and I began to weep profusely. I was scared of these men. I was sad for my uncle, and I was scared to die. I must have cried for an hour, slumped against the wall of the bunker, when finally the tears subsided on their own, and were replaced with a burning, seething hatred for the men above me and what they had done. "Hair to the Kozlowskis," I said to myself, as I checked the monitors to ensure the two men were still where I'd last seen them. Confirming that, I slung the shotgun over my back and began to climb the ladder, hand over hand, time to do or die. Opening the secret passage I had fallen through proved to be the hardest part, as I groped along the wall in the darkness for some kind of switch or button that would let me out. It took a solid 5 minutes of scrambling, but finally my hand caught on some tiny switch and the door began to slide open. I winced as the door caught on the remnants of the wardrobe that had concealed it, and sent some planks clattering to the floor. "Shit, shit, shit," I mumbled to myself and held my breath.
swinging the shotgun into my hands and pointing it towards the door. I stood still as a statue for an eternity before I finally began to hear slow steps echoing in the hallway. "I think it was this one," I heard Levy mumble to himself through the door, and the creak of hinges told me he had opened the door across the hall. My heart began to beat furiously in my chest, and my hands became slick with sweat as I waited. Waited, while I heard the boy picking through the other room. He muttered something under his breath, and I heard his footsteps again approaching my door. I didn't want to give him time to even see me, and as soon as the hinges of the door in front of me began to creak, I pulled the trigger and the shotgun let out a deafening roar. A dozen splintering holes appeared on the door in front of me. An ear-piercing shriek came from the other side of the door, and the sound of a body crashing to the floor. "If I ever get home, I'm going to be frickin' deaf," I said to myself with a nervous smile. I racked the shotgun and opened the bedroom door inwards, revealing Levy slumped against the far wall of the hallway, fear and pain in his eyes. The shot had caught him everywhere from the knees to the stomach, and he was bleeding from a dozen or more holes and covered in splinters from the door. It's hard to imagine how you'll ever act in a situation like this. I bent over to the kid and stuck my middle finger right up in front of his face, giving him the biggest smile I could manage as I shook my finger in his face. He merely moaned and squirmed away from me. "Now the fat one," I said as I turned and slowly made my way down the hall, heart still pounding and the gun held out in front of me. I reached the top of the stairs and looked down to see that the chair where Whiskey had sat was now empty. I only had a second to be confused before a huge meaty arm wrapped around my neck, and I was tackled to the ground, my breath going out of me as I hit the floor. I clawed at the arm and tried to bite my way out, the shotgun thrown from my hands, but it proved to be useless. Whiskey was too huge. He wrestled my arms behind my back and zip-tied my hands together, along with my ankles. I had given up at that point, knowing there was nothing I could do. Whiskey stood up out of breath and picked up the axe from the floor.
"She shot me!"
Levy cried from the hallway. His face was pale as a ghost.
"Obviously,"
Whiskey said as he lumbered towards the scrawny kid.
"What are we gonna do?"
Levy asked, panic in his voice.
"We?"
Whiskey asked, as he swung the big fireman's axe around in a wide arc and brought it down onto Levy's chest. The boy let out a shriek as he saw the axe coming, which turned into a gurgle as the life left him. I could still hear the sickening crunch sound his ribs made as the axe was wrenched free.
"Your shot was too low. Makes a man suffer to die from a hit like that,"
Whiskey grunted as he walked back towards me. "Don't give me no more problems, and we should get back to Jack just fine." Whiskey took my shotgun from the floor and hung it off his shoulder. He found a coil of rope somewhere in the house and looped one end around my neck, tying the other off on his belt. He cut the ties off my ankle and lifted me to my feet, tugging the rope to make me follow him. Whiskey let out a deep-bellied chuckle.
"Always wanted me a dog. I did."
We walked for hours through the woods. Our pace was slow with Whiskey leading the way. But we finally reached a truck that had been parked deep in the forest, on a trail that I didn't recognize. Whiskey helped me into the back seat of the truck, and the engine roared to life as we set off down the trail. It may have been the exhaustion of the day, or the bumping and rocking of the truck, but I fell asleep almost instantly. It was a deep, dreamless sleep, but when I opened my eyes,
my current situation rushed back upon me. I was laying on an old pallet that had a blanket thrown on top of it, in a ragged shed that appeared to be built out of random lumber and sheet metal. I was still tied to a hook on the wall, but my hands had been cut free at least. I couldn't tell what time it was, but it was daytime. My captors were murmuring and muttering outside, and I heard the slam of vehicle doors and the sounds of barrels and bottles being moved and shunted around.
"We're gonna be rich!"
shouted one of the voices from outside, followed by a chorus of agreement and a few laughs. I heard the sound of a bottle being uncorked, and the cracking of a fire. But aside from a few slits in the walls of my shed, I had no way to see what was going on outside. I understand now why people say they fear the unknown. If my captors would have just told me what they were going to do to me, I feel like I would have been less afraid. The fact I was simply locked in a shed and tied to the wall made my head swim with horrible ideas of what fate might have in store for me. Evidently, fate had nothing in store for me that night, as the men simply drank and sat around the fire late into the night. Hours later, who knows what time it was, the shed door opened, and a small plastic bag was thrown in that contained a few crackers and an open can of soup. It's safe to say that I never felt terror like I felt that night. But little did I know that wasn't even the worst of it. I was laying on the pallet, struggling to find a way to lay down that was at least somewhat comfortable, when a shout from outside caught my attention. The men were arguing about something and shouting incoherently, and the only words I could make out being,
"Who's there?"
A gunshot broke the commotion, and a crashing and snapping sound came from the tree line around the camp. Not knowing whether or not I would even have another chance of getting out, I worked furiously at untying the rope around my neck. What the point of tying me up when my hands were free, I never knew. I got the rope off quickly as the sounds of combat from outside grew louder and louder. Gunshots kept ringing, and I heard my shotgun go off. Someone screamed, and I heard Jack loudly bellow for someone to shoot the damned thing. I figured at that time that a bear had gotten into the camp or something, and I threw my weight against the door, which held, but I saw the hinges coming loose. It was lucky for me that the shed was so poorly built, as another shock with my shoulders sent the door crashing to the ground. The camp was chaos. The men were running with weapons, shouting and shots were ringing out. But I paid it little attention as I ran to the truck that we had arrived in, parked at the edge of the camp. I jumped into the driver's seat and almost shouted with joy as I realized the keys were still there. I turned the keys and the truck roared to life. But when the headlights came on, the lights illuminated blood. Blood everywhere. Two bodies laid near the fire, looking as though they had almost been ripped in half. I caught a glimpse of Jack of Spades at the edge of the headlight beams, with some sort of human thing clinging to him and biting into his neck, where blood was spurting into the air. I felt sick and was almost paralyzed with awe, but I slammed the truck into reverse and began to back up, when the thing on top of Jack sat up and stared right at me. My scream filled the truck. It was Uncle Kaz. Blood soaked his face and his whole body. His clothing was ripped and torn everywhere, as if he had been running through the woods for days. A horrible wound had ripped him open from below his ribs, just below his navel, and it looked as though some of his guts were hanging out. Flesh had been ripped and torn, and was a bizarre shade of gray, but his eyes... God, his eyes were pure white, as if they had rolled back into his head. He stood up from the body, looking straight at me, and slowly reached out an arm towards me in the truck as he shambled a few steps towards me. Another gunshot echoed through the night and ripped straight through Kaz's chest, which drew Uncle's or that thing's attention. His head snapped in the direction the shot had came from, and he sprinted towards the shooter, teeth bared and bloody. Without thinking, I floored the truck into reverse and whipped it around, speeding out of the camp as fast as I dared to drive on the forest roads in the middle of the night. The sounds of shooting and screaming faded behind me. I drove through the twisting forest road all night long, no clue where I was or where I was going. As the rosy fingers of dawn began to creep over the horizon, I finally reached a highway. What highway was it? I had no clue, but I drove in stunned silence until I found a truck stop and asked where I was. The attendant looked at me as if I was a ghost as I stood there, and he explained where I was and asked if I was okay. I replied with a simple, yes, and left. It took me the rest of the day to get back to my apartment that I shambled into and collapsed on my bed, waking up almost 16 hours later. I felt completely shattered inside, and I told my family that I had gotten into a car accident and Uncle Kaz had loaned me a truck. Somehow, I returned to regular life. I put on a smile, but inside I was a mess. I'd been that way for the past 3 years. Every once in a while, my family would ask how Uncle Kaz was, and I always told them the last time that I had seen him, he was fine. He never made it around to any family gatherings anymore, but nobody seemed to mind, until last week that was. Last week, my parents received a phone call from a police station far up north. Uncle Kaz was dead. His bones had been found by some hikers deep in the woods, and had matched dental records of Kaz that had been in a national database. They sent us the bones and we had a small funeral in the city. All his brothers and sisters and all my cousins in attendance. As we were sitting, eating sandwiches and drinking coffee after the service, my dad came up to me and produced a letter from his pocket. Uncle Kaz never left a will, but he gave me this letter about 10 years ago. He told me to give it to you once he was dead. Don't worry, I never opened it. My dad smiled a sad smile and handed me the letter. I didn't read it until I was home. Inside was a set of keys, the keys to the cabin. He said that even at 15, he knew that I would be the one to take over for him, and mentioned that by now I had probably learned all of his secrets and knew what I needed to do. For the family name, it said. I had a new car by this point, and I was out of school. I told my work I needed a week off to help settle my family estate, and I took off towards the north to visit the cabin one last time. I at least owed Uncle Kaz that, for saving my life after all. It was emotionally draining the whole way there, and physically draining to clear the unused roads that led to the cabin. I finally arrived and smiled at my old car still parked outside, rusted and grown over with weeds. The cabin was run down, overgrown, and it looked as though a number of animals had lived there over the years. It was a sad sight, but 3 years of grief had blunted my emotions somewhat. I shed a few tears as I tried to tidy up a few things in the ransacked house, which had not been touched since Jack and his gang had trashed it years before. Blood was still splattered all over the great room floor, and the back door was still kicked in. I spent the night in my old room, scared, sad, but strangely happy. As I mentioned at the start of this, I don't expect to be alive much longer. I've rolled as many barrels of unmixed moonshine into the house as I possibly could. I've soaked it into the floors, the walls, and dumped liters of it around the doors. The barrels that I did not need, I piled up over the fireplace, ready to become a raging inferno when the need arises. You might ask me why I would burn down the cabin that my uncle had spent so long building, that we have so many happy memories in.
Well, the one thing that I never found in the house that by all rights should still have been there was Levy's body. Last night I merely heard prowling outside the house. But now, tonight, I've seen them on the edges of the trees, ducking in and out of bushes. Levy with his shattered chest, Jack with his throat torn out, Whiskey with an arm loped off, and the others with mortal wounds of their own. Their flesh is rotten, their eyes are white as snow, and their teeth are black with ancient blood. I guess sometimes the dead can't die if they have unfinished business. But tonight, I hope to prove that the living don't die when they have unfinished business either. I've taken as many of my uncle's guns from the bunker that I could possibly use. The moonshine makes this whole house a bonfire waiting to happen. And I don't plan on dying until every single one of those monsters in the woods is burned to cinders. I'm Hannah Kozlowski, heir of the family, and I'm about to kill some frickin' monsters.